The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And what a show we have lined up for you today. Glad you're joining us. Your time is precious. We will not waste any of it. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Update.
Yeah, I want to update a story that we talked about yesterday. A school teacher in the Marysville School District at Marysville Middle School has a sibling who used to be a police officer. And so she put up a thin blue line, pro-police flag, in her classroom. She also apparently has a sibling who is LGBTQ. And this teacher has a pride flag up in her classroom as well. Well, some colleagues complained about the pro-police flag, and she was ordered to take it down. Now, this is a school where many classrooms have Black Lives Matter and pride flags and posters and celebrations. But the pro-police flag had to come down. And when we talked about this yesterday, we mentioned that her brother is a former Marysville cop and also a school resource officer at the time of the horrible school shooting at Marysville Pilchuck. And he says that too often people in his former profession, his name's Chris Sutherland, are being demonized.
Yeah, it's been... demonized over a while now, just that for law enforcement. Yet, I just wish people would understand, you know, how important that is and what law enforcement means to the communities and the schools.
He told that to Jason Rance on KTTH. Okay. So now we have heard from the Marysville school superintendent. And I'm very disappointed. It's Dr. Chris Pearson. Nicole reached out last night and invited Dr. Pearson to come on the show, and they have not responded at all to our invitation. But I find it very disappointing when a statement is sent out to families that is so filled with logical holes. And I would love to debate some of these logical holes that I see with the superintendent, but they've chosen to not respond to our invitation. But what he said in the Dear Marysville Families and Staff, today I arrived at our service center to a variety of emails and phone messages related to different social media posts and articles about the thin blue line flag. This letter seeks to provide some clarification about the topic of political speech in the classroom and why some speech may be permissible per policy while others may not. And then he says, if a teacher promotes a political belief in their course content that is not clearly relevant to the material being taught, or when the teacher may be reasonably perceived as simply using their position as a platform for promoting their own view, or when the teacher's speech could potentially disrupt the student learning environment, then the teacher is in violation of our policies. And he said a determination was made about the thin blue line flag in a classroom. And he says it doesn't relate to the aforementioned policies. And he said later in this email, it's a very long email, I cannot read you the whole thing, but he says one of the questions that's come up has been about the difference between a thin blue line flag display and a Black Lives Matter display or the pride flag. In a school context, he writes, and related to the aforementioned policies, these other two symbols, meaning Black Lives Matter and pride, can be seen as having a specific educational purpose that is directly aligned with instructional objectives or extracurricular programs. And he says the thin blue line pro-police flag does not. Well, Black Lives Matter is, by their own admission, the two founders were Marxists. And it clearly has political objectives as an organization. What I find interesting is he says BLM and Pride are directly related to school-type material. Being pro-police is not. Now, do you think there's a little debate hole there that could be exploited if I was talking to the superintendent? Because that seems to prove to me that only one side of the political spectrum is being taught to the children at Marysville Middle School. And anything on the other side of the political spectrum is considered hate speech, even though it's supporting our police officers, for whom I have tremendous respect. And I understand that it's very fashionable right now to teach children to hate cops. And I understand that that's why we've got all these businesses here in Seattle where renegade employees refuse to serve a cop in uniform. Because this has been a very carefully taught hatred. And it's fairly recent. I'm guessing most of us, me, you, were raised to respect police. Now, that doesn't mean that now we should unthinkingly support the police, because every great cop that I know, and I know a lot of great cops, they all, every one of them, believes that, yes, we can and should want to be better as a department, as an agency. Nobody denies that. But the vast majority of cops are wonderful, and we are teaching our children all too often to hate the police, even in first grade classrooms. Some of the books that I've shared with you on the show. And this is not a healthy thing. It's not healthy for kids. And this will relate directly to my next story, but we are all too often teaching kids to hate those with whom they disagree. It really didn't used to be that way. I have so many friends who are staunch Democrats. I mean, people I love. And I don't care what their politics are. I don't hate them because I disagree with them politically. There are a lot of people who hate me because they disagree with me politically. They've never met me, but they know they disagree, so they personally hate me. We can't teach our kids this. And let me elaborate on that. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
There is a story in the Seattle Times today that Washington's COVID hospitalizations have dropped. That's great news. But the headline can't just be great news about COVID. Here's the whole headline. Washington's COVID hospitalizations drop, but optimism is measured. I just don't know what the winter will bring. So the story with actual stats is that COVID hospitalizations have dropped. Now, it's still a problem. And as they say in the article, 30 people in our state are dying per day from COVID. But it talked about how the hospitalizations are dropping, and we are certainly seem to be moving in the right direction. But then way down in the story, they start talking about our children. And this is where I'm going to relate it to the last topic. They said that the chief clinical officer at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital in Tacoma talked about another recent challenge, and that's an influx of behavioral health patients. And this doctor, Chris Laddish, said, "We are certainly seeing that on the pediatric side, in the majority of our ERs that treat children, in general, we've seen an increase in kids struggling with suicide, presenting with anxiety and depression." So they're seeing that in record numbers here in our Puget Sound region, and every study that I've seen across the country reflects that same trend. And I've talked about this rather extensively. If you heard Brock Heward very emotionally on my show several weeks ago talk about one of their dearest family friends who lost a child to suicide, an unbelievable kid, high school senior, on his way to college, plays sports, unbelievable, great student. And this is an issue we should all care about deeply. And by the way, only 7 seconds is the organization related to Cabe Gebbers that his family and others have started. Just reach out to anybody who you know might be in distress. But so why is this? Why are we seeing a big spike around here in children who are suicidal? I was thinking about that rather extensively after I read that quote from the doctor. And here's what I remember about my childhood. You know, I've told you, my home life wasn't ideal. Dad was gone. Most part, my mom was single. Dad came back for a year or two. I don't even remember. I had no relationship with him. We were poverty level. Okay. But I also remember just being a really happy kid. Yeah, growing up on the mean streets of Ballard and riding my bike. So, but why is that? Well, because we were so poor, I made some decisions. Because I grew up with the mentality of other people should take care of us. Because that's what my mom talked about. And about age 13, I realized, actually it was age 12, I realized I had to break away from that. And I got a job at the little corner market in Ballard, near where I grew up. Minimum wage then was $2.50 an hour, but the owner of Food Town, really nice guy, he said, since you're 12 years old, I can't legally hire you, but tell you what, I'll give you $2 an hour and it'll be under the table. So they'll just pay me cash. Awesome. $2 an hour. You kidding me? I don't care if it's below minimum wage. I had a job. And I can honestly tell you that I have not been without a job for any day in my lifetime since age 12. Now, part of that is I'm incredibly fortunate because I'm in one of the most volatile of industries where keeping a show for 26 years is almost unheard of. But I also understood that you have to have a work ethic. And I wasn't focused on social justice issues. And I wasn't fearing that I'll never be able to have kids because of global warming. And I wasn't being taught to hate police and to hate people, you know, critical race theory, to hate people because, or if people hate me because of our races. But that's what's being taught to our kids today. And there's no wonder that kids are suicidal, because so much of what is being taught is not designed to protect this time of joy. And let's face it, we have enough problems as adults, but in the first 12 years of life, we don't need to be the tools, the weapons of adults who are doing just that, weaponizing kids for their cause. And they don't care what it does to the kids. And then with this government spending bill that's coming out, $3.5 trillion, there is so much welfare in that bill. And for all the things that are talked about, free college, free, I mean, they say free everything. Free daycare, free college, free health care, free everything. No, the Americans will have to pay for it, despite what Joe Biden tweeted yesterday. It'll cost zero. No, it'll cost $3.5 trillion. But in none of these initiatives, you know, like when they talk about free community college, I worked 60 hours a week while I was going to college. I had to. There is no mandate to ask young people to work if they're going to get all this free stuff. And why not? Larry Kudlow, who's on Fox Business, and he was an economic advisor to the last administration, he was talking last night about that mandate that does, or that tax and welfare that does not include telling people to work for all the things we are giving you supposedly for free.
But there's not one stipulation, not one rule that you have to work. There's no workfare, there's no work requirements, and in fact, Sean, there's no education requirements. So you've got massive welfare dependency, It's like the Great Society to the, I don't know, 20th or 50th power. But that will damage the soul of America. That goes to the heart of American culture. You know, work is dignity. Work holds families together. Work provides opportunities for the least among us. And this damage that they're going to do, and it's from the far left, it's from the crazy progressives, this crazy textbook. This is the thing that worries me the most.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Because all I, you know, my reference point and everything that I talk about on this show is through the prism of my personal life experience. That's all I can talk about with any degree of authority and certainty. But I know that starting to work when I was 12 years old has led to a, you know, unimaginably wonderful life. And, you know, what I have now with this gig and, you know, what I have with you and the relationship I have with the listeners. But it was a work ethic that was instilled. I mean, I adopted it. I didn't really have anybody instill it. But I didn't spend time talking about body parts in kindergarten and being guilty because of skin color or hating somebody because of skin color. All these things that are being done now to our kids. And then we wonder why the hospitals, the pediatric hospitals are saying, we're seeing an increase in suicidal tendencies. Well, yeah, of course you are. Because we are teaching kids all too often to not be joyful. And I think that is criminal. We are telling kids they don't have to work. We'll give you lots of other people's stuff. And what a horrible way, because you don't see a future for yourself then. You will always be beholden to government's largesse. You will always be trapped if you don't believe that you can lift yourself up. And too often we are telling people that they don't have a chance because they are poor, because they don't have a dad, because of their skin color. You don't have a chance, but government will take care of you for the rest of your life. The most damaging message imaginable. We should be talking instead of all the hatred that's being taught. Hate the police. Hate everybody. Everybody who disagrees with you. Hate them. We should be talking about what you can do for yourself. Because if you take all of these things that adults are using children for, and the kids take all of that energy and put it into getting educated or learning a trade. You don't have to get a college education or a college degree. There are plenty of trades that pay six figures and are in desperate need of great workers. But if you're resolved to educate yourself or make sure you get educated or make sure you learn that trade and make sure that you make yourself a valuable person to prospective employers, then you have control. But we're teaching everybody to be victims, and it's manifesting itself in the most damaging way at these children's hospitals. Got to do better for our kids. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Very rarely in the first 45 minutes of the show do I talk about anything except local topics. But we're going to deny that tradition because what's happened this morning is the most damning imaginable for the Biden administration. And I'm going to play the audio coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. America is facing a very harsh reality. This afternoon, the chaotic exit from Afghanistan, one of the worst foreign policy disasters in our nation's history. After 20 years of sacrificing the blood of our bravest and finest, after assuring the Americans, President Biden said no Americans will be left behind. They told us that the Afghan army was more than ready to stand up to the Taliban. And it all collapsed. We shed the blood of thousands for nothing, all in vain, which is one of the most heartbreaking things you can possibly imagine, especially for their family members. And then we know today that this all happened either because the president of the United States is a liar, and as Barack Obama's defense secretary said, has been wrong on every foreign policy decision for 40 years. It's either that or Joe Biden is going senile. And I know that those are harsh, frank words. There is no other option. Because we found out today that the two top generals, General Milley, General McKenzie, they said, they told Joe Biden, we need to keep 2,500 troops in Afghanistan because they foresaw what was going to happen. And Joe Biden unilaterally defied his military officers and then lied about it. Or he didn't know what he was doing, and today he doesn't remember decisions he made 2 months ago. General Milley and General McKenzie were testifying before Congress today. Here's General Milley.
General Milley, it's your testimony that you recommended 2,500 troops approximately stay in Afghanistan?
As I've said many times before this committee and other committees, I don't share my personal recommendations to the president, but I can tell you my personal opinion and my assessment if that's what you want.
Yes, please.
Yes, my assessment was back in the fall of 20, and it remained consistent throughout, that we should keep a steady state of 2,500, and it could bounce up to 3,500, maybe something like that, in order to move toward a negotiated, gated solution.
Did you ever present that assessment personally to President Biden?
I don't discuss exactly what my conversations are with the sitting president in the Oval Office, but I can tell you what my personal opinion was, and I'm always candid.
Okay, I'm always candid. So clearly he did share that with President Biden. General McKenzie was even more blunt.
I recommended that we maintain 2,500 troops in Afghanistan. I'm confident that the president heard all the recommendations and listened to them very thoughtfully.
Okay. So Joe Biden listened to the recommendations from the two top generals and top military brass. We need to leave troops there. And everybody knows that. A fifth grader knows that if you pull out the military before you pulled out all the citizens, that it would be disastrous. A fifth grader would know that if you left $80 billion of advanced American military equipment and weapons and tanks and helicopters to a terrorist organization, that it would have disastrous consequences. So you just heard two generals say that it was their opinion that we needed to leave 2,500 troops there, that they did communicate that with President Joe Biden. Let's go back a couple of months. Now, here's what we clearly know from this as well. When George Stephanopoulos interviewed Joe Biden a couple of months ago, it is now obvious that military people and strategists had leaked to Stephanopoulos that they believed we needed to leave 2,500 troops there, because Stephanopoulos was very accurate with his numbers in his questions. So this is Stephanopoulos and Biden from about 2 months ago.
No one told, your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
Okay. Two generals under oath today testified that they did communicate that to Joe Biden. So either Joe Biden there is lying, or he is senile and truly means, I don't remember that. And whatever the case, leaving the fate of the 13 U.S. service members who got blown up by a suicide bomber, the hundreds of other people who were maimed and killed in that attack, the United States firing a drone that killed, murdered 7 children and 3 adult aid workers who were trying to deliver water. And all of this because we have a president who is either a liar, and Joe Biden has been a horrible liar. He's been a plagiarist his entire life. That's going back decades. We all know that. It's well documented. Or He is going senile. But we can't allow this. The United States of America cannot have this. People are dying. People have died. People have been killed. Our service members have been lost. Defense Secretary Austin was asked if Joe Biden lied to ABC News.
President Biden last month in an interview with George Stephanopoulos said that no military leader advised him to leave a small troop presence in Afghanistan. Is that true?
Senator Cotton, I believe that, well, first of all, I know the president to be an honest and forthright man.
It's a simple question, Secretary Austin. He said no senior military leader advised him to leave a small troop presence behind. Is that true or not? Did these officer and General Miller's recommendations get to the president personally?
Their input was received by the president and considered by the president, for sure. In terms of what they specifically recommended, Senator, they're not going to provide what they recommended in confidence.
That's not true. General McKenzie specifically said,
I recommended that we maintain 2,500 troops.
Okay, it was presented. It was recommended. And Joe Biden clearly said,
no one told, your military advisors did not tell you, no, we should just keep 2,500 troops. It's been a stable situation for the last several years. We can do that. We can continue to do that.
No, no one said that to me that I can recall.
Okay. Is he lying or is he senile? Only two options. Or was everybody who was testifying under oath this morning not telling the truth? I think the latter is very unlikely. So Joe Biden either just defied his generals because he's been wrong on every foreign policy decision for more than 40 years, according to Barack Obama's defense secretary, and he made a decision that has been catastrophic. That means that all our service members over the last 20 years died in vain in Australia. Those who lost limbs, it was all in vain. He just went wildcat, went against all the advice, and got 13 service members killed, got hundreds of other people maimed and injured, blew up seven children with a drone strike. Or he's senile. And I don't know which one it is, but they both scare me more than any president ever has. And America is seeing it now. I mean, everybody's recognized. Joe Biden carried Colorado, and a new poll out today, he's underwater 41-51 approval in Colorado, a state he carried just months ago. The nation realizes that they made a grave mistake. We got lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Yeah, speaking about children and how adults are using them for the adults' cause. Well, the most notable kids to be recruited is climate activist Greta Thunberg. And we have some new audio from her that you need to hear coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, it was the theme of the first half hour of my show, with Mary's Bridge Children's Hospital reporting that they are seeing more and more kids with suicidal tendencies. And one of my listeners, I said there are a lot of reasons for that, but one is that adults are using them as pawns for social justice or other causes. Another one I said is a welfare mentality. And then a listener texted me, and it's a great point. Social media is one of the most hateful, poisoning diseases that has ever been inflicted on our kids. And the people who own the social media companies, they all know that. They won't even let their own kids on. But they don't mind making hundreds of millions or billions of dollars by damaging the minds and the souls and the psyches of children. So thank you for the listener who texted that in, because that's a very important point to be made as well. Okay, let's get back to adults using children for their social causes. There are a lot of kids who, you know, 10, 12, 14 years old, who have said, yeah, I'm never going to have kids because the world's going to be underwater by the time I'm 30. And they really believe that, because there are people in politics who say that we only have 10 years. If we don't tax people trillions of dollars right now, we only have 10 years. Well, of course, one of the most notable of climate activists is Greta Thunberg. Hey, Nicole, would you bump up from way back when she was talking about how we've destroyed her childhood and how dare you? But Greta Thunberg's, I think, Danish girl? Swedish? Danish? I don't remember. But there is a youth climate forum going on right now in Milan, Italy. And Greta Thunberg was asked to be one of the keynote speakers. I think she's about 18 years old now. And I have to say, her speech was very, very powerful.
There is no planet B. There is no planet blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. This is not about some expensive, politically correct green act of bunny hugging or blah, blah, blah. Build back better, blah, blah, blah. Green economy, blah, blah, blah. Net zero by 2050, blah, blah, blah. Net zero by 2050, blah, blah, blah. Net zero, blah, blah, blah. Climate neutral, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, shoot. Doggone it. I saw something shiny in my studio, and I got distracted, and I wasn't able to listen. Hey, Andrew, did you by any chance have a chance to transcribe that as I was playing it?
Oh, yeah, I got it down right here.
Oh, do you? Oh.
I looked up for you. She is Swedish.
Swedish, thank you very much. Okay. If you transcribed it, since I didn't even hear it, I wasn't paying attention, could you please read it back to me?
Sure, let me see. Okay. There is no planet B. There is no planet blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. This is not about some expensive, politically correct green ad of honey of bunny hugging or blah, blah, blah. Build back better, blah, blah, blah. Green economy, blah, blah, blah. Net zero by 25, 2050, blah, blah, blah. Net zero by 2050, blah, blah, blah. Net zero, blah, blah, blah. Climate neutral, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Oh, that is powerful, man. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, Andrew. Thank you very much. But you heard she was talking about this. The... But the big push, of course, Jay Inslee's on board with this, is net zero by 2050. That's the big push. And I mentioned yesterday on the show at nature.com, which is pro, let's spend as much on fighting climate change as possible. It's a very supportive ally of the climate alarmists. And Nature.com, they issued a spending evaluation in 2021 dollars of what net zero by 2050 would cost every single person. 20% of your earnings would go to getting us to net zero. 20%. So if you make $100,000 a year, you will give $20,000 to the green people. and that's to get us to net zero, which is their mission. Jay Inslee has talked about it. And, I mean, if he has to put in motion the wheels that would get us to give 20% of our earnings to government for this cause, then of course they're going to go for that. I mean, this is, you know, as I've said, I believe in global warming. I believe that we have change. I just disagree on the impact that man has on that. Now, here's Greta. Here's from a couple years ago.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. I know. It's horrible. Okay, we're going to check the news for you here at the top of the hour. And then the Fastest 15 is coming up next with an update on that triple murder in Des Moines. Very sad. Details coming up on the Dory Monson Show.